I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke.
All right, we're back. We took a week off. So Joanna, you had surgery on your hand, your wrist. How are you feeling now? Are you feeling better?
I did. Yeah, I'm feeling so much better now. I'm all healed up. But yeah, it was a little bit tougher going than I expected it to be honest. I think it's only in Scotland we call it a stookie. I think everywhere else it's called a plaster. But yeah. Like a plaster on your arm. And I thought, oh, I'll just be like using my hand like normal, I'll just have this plaster on, but it wasn't like that at all. It was very sore and tender, and I just had like a bandage on it. I had to do these exercises, and it was quite painful, and I basically had to get Sean to help me do most things. Luckily I was able to go to the toilet myself. Which is good.
How many times have you actually worn a bra?
Actually, I did wear a bra every day.
I don't even do that, and there's nothing wrong with my hand.
Well, I would say that I'm proud of myself, but I don't wear like proper bras. I just wear like bralettes, you know, the ones that you can just pull over your head. So it's really kind of like a minimal effort bra. So
fair enough.
I still feel that was a kind of achievement though. But yeah, Sean basically had to tie my hair up for me and everything. It was just kind of pathetic. But it also meant that I could just chill and make him run around after me, which was really nice as well.
Yeah. Did you order in loads of food and just get pampered and looked after then?
We actually only ordered food the day of my operation, actually.
That is really good.
Yeah, and Sean cooked every other night, so that was good, because obviously we do the HelloFresh. That was really nice. But yeah, I've been off work for like 2 weeks, and I feel like I'm almost back to normal now. So yeah, I'm just really glad to be able to have like full functioning hand again, because you kind of don't realise how difficult it is when you're suddenly without one.
I feel like it's like that whenever you're ill, even silly things like, you know, when you're really choked with a cold and you're like, I remember when I could breathe through that nostril.
Yes. Do you know what? I'm like the worst patient. Like if I ever had some sort of real ailment, I would fully expect that Sean would divorce me, quite frankly, because I would just be a nightmare. Like if I had some sort of stomach ache, and you know, like if I was lying in bed or like I had the flu or something, I'd be like, oh my God, I'll never take feeling well for granted again.
So dramatic.
Totally. I'm like pity, self-pity party. I am like the queen of the self-pity party when I'm ill. I'm not a good patient at all.
Well, I think we have to say thank you though to the lovely listeners that reached out and wished you good wishes and getting better soon. It was really cute.
That was really, really sweet. It was totally unexpected and really sweet. I am really grateful. Thank you so much for all your well wishes.
She's going to milk it for ages now.
Absolutely. So tell me, so what have you been doing? So since we've been off, you must have some true crime chat since we last recorded.
Yeah. So obviously, if anyone's not seen it, then I don't know where you've been, but The Line of Duty, the no spoilers really.
Oh, dear God.
If, you know, the last episode was just horrific.
I feel like if anyone hasn't seen it by now, they deserve for it to be spoiled for them.
Yeah. It was pants, wasn't it? It was really bad.
Yeah, I have to admit, I was sitting watching it and I was just sort of like, what? You know, I kept expecting this twist to come and it didn't. And then it felt like, you know, when you spent like a lot of time and effort on something and you're just kind of done, you're just kind of tired and fed up, you can't really be bothered anymore. And you're just like, oh, okay, the end. That is what it felt like.
Like when you're a kid and you're writing a story and you write and then I woke up because you can't be arsed finishing the plot off properly.
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of what it felt like.
100%. I completely agree.
Rich and I just looked at each other like the credits rolled and we're saying that can't be it. Surely there's more. I mean, is that it? That is it.
I kept looking at the clock and thinking, there's only 10 minutes left. Like, if there's, you know, because I thought it was maybe going to be a longer episode as well, with it being the final. And it wasn't. And I kept looking at the clock thinking, well, there's only 10 minutes left. So if there's going to be a twist, they're going to have to do it soon. Do you know what I mean? Like, and yeah, it was like, oh yeah, it was just this idiot the whole time. And oh, it was the people that you already knew. But then that just sort of fell away because, you know, such and such died. And yeah, and it's like, oh.
Yeah. Okay. They're like, there's no great mastermind behind any of it. Lol, you wasted so many hours of your life.
We're just going to put these pictures in a box now and put a lid on it, and that's the end.
And then we're just going to leave a really depressing note at the end saying that anti-corruption's worse than ever and there's nothing that you can do about it. Okay, thanks for watching. Bye.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, what?
Absolutely.
No.
Absolutely, yeah.
Come back here. Finish this properly.
It was funny because I actually went on Martin Compston's, for anyone who doesn't know that Martin Compston is Scottish, shame on you. You should know by now. There are many people that go, oh, I didn't realise he's Scottish. I'm like, yes, he's a fucking national treasure. He's Scottish. Martin, please come on our podcast. I have invited you. I've reached out to your agency several times and I am getting blatantly ignored. It'd be really nice if you were to come and talk to us. But anyway,
if anyone knows them, pass it on.
Yeah, drop a good word. I looked on his Instagram after the final and the amount of comments that were just like, what the fucking fuck was that?
The memes were particularly good on Twitter, I have to say. I was like, well, I have to say the last episode was terrible, but the comedy content on Twitter has been top notch tonight. So
yeah,
it was a silver lining.
The positive that I can draw from it is the fact that Hastings was not H. And for me, that's fine. That's great because I love the man. And I'm very glad that he wasn't involved to any degree. So yeah, that's a silver lining.
RIP Line of Duty.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Well, it did seem, I mean, I know that they said they didn't know whether they would do another series or whatever, but it seems pretty final from that last episode. It didn't feel like there was going to...
I think a lot of people wouldn't watch it out of spite in case they do the same thing again.
Yeah.
Burned once, you know.
Yeah, perhaps.
I'm not falling for those tricks again.
We want to thank Podcorn for being the sponsor of this week's episode. Podcorn is an online marketplace that connects podcasts of all sizes with potential sponsors, offering unique sponsorships from short adverts, interviews, topical discussions, and more. If you're lucky, you can even get sent items to try and review. As the podcaster, you get to choose who you work with, so you can tailor the products and people you work with to suit your listeners and your show. Podcorn is an easy platform to use. You browse the opportunities available, set your own rates, and work directly with the brands you want to. I've had lots of fun trying my hand at pitching for some brands that I already know and love, so watch this space. You never give up any rights to your podcast, and Podcorn fully support you throughout the process. Click the link in our show notes to find out more about Podcorn and start monetizing your episodes today.
Welcome to I Hate Your Taste in Movies. I'm Jackie, and I love action movies, but I really hate horror movies.
I'm Jen. I love horror movies, but I just can't stand musicals.
And I'm Austin. I love all things musical, but I absolutely hate action movies.
Join us each week as we share our all-time favorite movies with our friends who will just rip them apart.
You can listen to us, I Hate Your Taste in Movies, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts.
And don't forget to follow us on social media. We're on Twitter at I Hate Your Taste and on Instagram at Hate Your Taste Pod.
Join us as we put our friendship to the test every week and learn surprising things about each other.
Like how Austin saw the movie Pitch Perfect in theaters 12 times.
Which is perfectly acceptable. Or how Jackie played with oil cans as a child.
Normal childhood behavior. Or how watching a zombie movie makes Jen want to eat chicken wings.
There is absolutely nothing wrong with that.
We release new episodes every Tuesday.
And for the record, I hate your taste in movies.
Okay, so what is your case for me this week, Emma?
Okie dokie. So I've done a little bit of a U and I've cheated a tiny bit, but not really. So The case is set in England, but one of the main people in it is from Scotland.
Okay. Acceptable.
And it's from around your neck of the woods. It's the case of Jane Longhurst.
Doesn't ring any bells.
For anyone that doesn't know, we record on Skype, and it's quite funny just seeing Joanna's thinking face sometimes. just see the cogs going. Okay, cool. Well, that's absolutely fine. So on Friday, the 14th of March, 2003, 31-year-old classical musician and teacher Jane Longhurst went missing from her home in Brighton. She had been planning to go to an exhibition in London with her mother, but as her mother was feeling unwell, they had cancelled their plans. Jane's partner Malcolm, Malcolm Sentence is his name, he lived with Jane and he came home later on. From what I can gather, he was at work and he came back in the evening and he was surprised that she wasn't there. He waited a little bit. It wasn't like her to not tell people where she was going or if plans had changed. So he was a little bit surprised. So he rang her mum and her mum said that, no, our plans got cancelled. Maybe she's at the local youth club. I think she did some volunteer work there. So he waited a little bit longer. He tried calling her phone, but her phone was switched off. And then he tried calling some of her close friends and nobody knew where she was at all. By midnight, Malcolm still hadn't heard anything, so he called the police and he reported Jane missing. Jane still hadn't been found by the following day, so the police began a search. Jane was quite well known. She volunteered, like I said, at the local youth club. She played in a local orchestra and she also taught in a special needs school. She had quite a vibrant social life and lots of friends as well. So there was a lot of people that they reached out to and spoke with as well. She was described as a smiley, happy person. She was known to be in a stable, quite happy relationship. And she wasn't known to have had any financial or mental health problems. So everyone that the police spoke to couldn't understand where she would be. And there wasn't any reason that anyone thought she would go missing of her own accord. The police combed through CCTV, Jane's bank accounts and her telephone records. On the morning of the Friday the 14th, after the plans were cancelled with her mum, she called her best friend Lisa's home. So Lisa Stevens was her best friend. She lived close by and she lived there with her partner, Graham Coutts. Lisa wasn't at home and her partner, Graham, answered the phone instead. So when police spoke to Graham, he said, oh, we had a short conversation. I said, Lisa's not at home. And that was pretty much it. Police conducted interviews with Jane's partner and her music teacher, people from the orchestra, family members, and lots of others. But they couldn't find any more information. They didn't have any leads and there was no clue as to where Jane had gone. They had no evidence to show that Jane was alive after the 14th. That's the day she went missing. Her bank account was untouched. Her phone was switched off. And there was no evidence that she had left the area. When they looked through CCTV, they couldn't find any evidence that she'd left. By the 18th of March, the police were treating Jane's disappearance as a possible homicide. So that was the 18th of March. There wasn't any real movement with the case apart from multiple media appeals. Jane's parents and her partner did multiple appeals for information to the public, but they didn't bring anything up, unfortunately. On the 19th of April, a local man was driving along a country lane near Wiggenholt Common. Don't know if you'll know where that is.
No.
No, it seems to be, it's like a local kind of patch of land and there's woods and things like that.
Okay.
He saw a patch of woodland on fire. So he called 999 to report the blaze and the firefighters turned up and he actually started to drive away and they went after him and got him back because they had found a human body in the flames. The man was questioned by the police and by the firefighters, but he was cleared. He had nothing to do with it. He was just particularly unlucky and happened to call it in at the time.
You said this was Wigginholt Common?
That's right, yeah.
So that's near Horsham, which is, I would say that's a good 20 to 25 minutes drive from here.
Yeah, 20 miles northwest of Brighton. So that's where the body
the
was
fire
found.
Was.
That's, well, that's where the fire was with the body in it.
Right.
And then the next day when they did the, they did an autopsy, and unfortunately it was found that it was the body of Jane. So that was obviously heartbreaking for her family. They had, when they did the autopsy, they, so she was found naked and she'd been asphyxiated to death. There were a pair of tights tied tightly around her throat as a ligature. Yeah. It's estimated that she likely died the day that she went missing. There was also a piece of charred cardboard box, the type that you use when you move house, and it had the word fragile still stamped on it, and it hadn't fully burned away, because they, it seems like they managed to find the fire fairly quickly after it was set. The fact that, you know, the tights were still intact, more or less. Most tights, as far as I'm aware, are made of quite flammable materials, I would
Nylon?
Say, would you not? Yeah, so it seems like it was found.
Man-made.
Yeah, I think the blaze was spotted pretty quickly and they put it out pretty quickly. The fact right. that there's still a bit of cardboard identifiable is quite amazing, actually.
Yeah, because cardboard would go really, really quickly. So
yeah.
Probably a lot of the evidence was like not destroyed, was probably
yeah.
still there.
So as a result of her being naked and the ligature around her throat and just the general scene itself, the police knew that they were dealing with a sexually motivated murder.
Okay.
So the police launched even more media presence and appeals. They also re-examined all the statements that they had taken at the time, just to see if they could find any leads. The statement from Graham Coutts, the man that Jane had last spoken with, stood out. So he didn't have an alibi for that day at all, and his statement was quite bland and it didn't have a lot of detail in it, so they were a little bit they were quite suspicious of him.
Is Graham, this the guy who lived nearby with the woman Lisa?
Yeah. Graham was Jane's best friend's boyfriend.
Right. I was gonna say, I couldn't remember who Lisa was, yeah. if she was a sister or a friend. So she was her best friend and Graham was
her boyfriend.
Boyfriend.
So he was a struggling gigging musician and he was from Leven in Scotland originally, but he'd moved down to Hove.
Okay.
So that's where he was living at the time with Lisa. Investigators went back to visit Graham at the property, at his property, sorry, and he seemed quite nervous and he couldn't give them any specific answers about the question, the night. So they were saying to him, where were you the night that the body was dumped, essentially, and put on fire? And he was doing some sort of job, and it was some sort of delivery job. So he would have receipts from people. I believe it's like parcel, you know, like if you get someone
okay.
around with Hermes and then you'd mm-hmm. have, you know, receipts.
A courier.
Yeah, I believe it's something similar to that, but it wasn't specific in the sources that I could find. But he was trying to give them receipts that were old, that
right.
didn't match that day. So they knew then that he was basically trying to cover something up, and they arrested him on suspicion of murder.
Okay.
One of the police officers also said that the first thing he saw when he walked through the door was a cardboard box with fragile written on it.
Ooh.
It looked really similar to the one that was found next to Jane's remains.
Okay.
Once again, could be completely coincidental, but I reckon mm-hmm. if that's something that you've just found and then you walk in and see that, it's got to be quite shocking.
Yeah.
As they had arrested him on suspicion of murder, they had the right to go through all of his property and including his car.
Okay.
And the officer said that they identified the smell of decomposition in the boot of his car.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Following his arrest, Graham protested his innocence and he claimed to have no knowledge of what happened to Jane. There is footage on YouTube of the interviews, and in the first one he's very calm and put together, actually, considering that they say that he was quite shaken when they went to the home to see him. He's pretty chill. They're saying, oh, what's your relation to Jane? He said, oh, we're friends, you know, just friends. Sometimes we go swimming and things like that with our partners, and yeah, she's best mates with my missus and all that kind of stuff. He's just totally cool, totally chill. Doesn't seem to be that bothered that he's been mm-hmm. arrested on suspicion of murder, which is a red flag for me straight mm-hmm. off the bat. So they had insufficient evidence at that point, and he wasn't confessing, so they had to release him after 23 hours. I don't know how it works in all over the world, but police can only hold someone in custody for a certain amount of time unless they have enough evidence to charge them, and therefore they had to release him at that point in time. They did a renewed appeal to the public for more information to see if anyone could give them anything.
So when was this really close to the time that she went missing, that he was arrested?
5 weeks later.
5 weeks.
Roughly five weeks.
Am I right in saying that she went missing in May 2003? Was that the date?
It was March 2003, March. And then it was April that he was arrested. Her body was found on the 19th of April, and I believe he was arrested a couple of days afterwards.
Okay.
They held him for 23 hours, and then they had to release him.
Right.
And then 2 days later, after another media appeal, there was, frankly, an astonishing break in the case. The manager of a local big yellow storage company mm-hmm. called the police to say that he had a very strange customer called Paul Kelly, who had rented a storage unit. So he'd rented a storage unit, and they just thought it was a bit of an odd fish. But not only that, the storage unit had a horrific smell in it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But they'd noticed quite recently that the smell had been dissipating. So they were, he was just shaken up by it, didn't like it, wanted them to come and have a look. And he was pretty sure it smelled like a decomposing body. And they wanted the police to come and see if this was linked to Jane's murder. Mm-hmm. So the police went along to the storage unit. And CCTV from the storage unit showed that Paul and Graham were the same person. He had used a fake name to rent the storage unit.
Mm-hmm.
They obtained a warrant and opened the unit, and they found Jane's bank card, her mobile phone, her clothing, and a swimming costume, all belonging to her. And then they also found a man's blood-stained blue shirt and a used condom. It would later be shown that the semen inside belonged to Graham and the DNA on the condom outside belonged to Jane.
Okay.
The other thing that, just to make anyone aware that Googles it or has a look on YouTube, is that the CCTV of him going in and out of the unit is available online. Graham visited Jane's remains at the unit 7 times in the 5 weeks he'd kept her there prior to disposing of her. Just to make you aware, if you would find that distressing or disturbing, the CCTV also shows Graham Cooks removing Jane's body in a large box on the day he would set her alight in the woods.
God.
Yeah, it's quite easy to stumble upon it, so it's just to make people aware of that. The bit that really got me was he has her body on a kind of trolley thing that you would move, I guess, heavy items, furniture about on, mm-hmm. and she's in a big cardboard box. He takes her out, puts her in the back of his car in the boot, and then he goes back in, and then you see him wipe stuff up off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he reaches down and wipes stuff up, and that just made me feel sick.
Oh, God.
Just horrific. So, and he's just very, I don't know, he's just very, like, perfunctory about the whole thing. Like, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. move this, do that. And
mess, need to clean it up.
Yeah, it's the fact that he went back to visit her and his motivations for doing that that really is disgusting and creepy, and that came up later on in the court trial as well.
My naive mind would like to believe he just wanted to check that she was still there. She hadn't been discovered, but I know that's probably not the reason.
Yeah. So Graham Coutts was arrested, and this time he was shown the CCTV evidence from the storage unit, and he basically clammed up, said, "I don't want to talk about it," and claimed that he was innocent still. He was charged with Jane's murder, unsurprisingly. So during the trial, Graham Coutts' defence was that he and Jane had participated in consensual sex, and that Jane had died as a result of a sex game gone wrong.
Of course.
Yeah. So what he said happened was, Jane called him looking for Lisa. He said, "Lisa's not here." She said, "Oh, that's a shame. I was going to go see my mum, but now I'm at a loose end." Because he and her had gone swimming with partners and with other people, he was apparently on a bit of a health kick at the time. And from what I can tell, Jane's quite a healthy person. She was quite outdoorsy. There's lots of pictures of her hiking and things like that. She agreed to go with him because she didn't think he was a threat, and, you know, it's her best mate's partner. So she said, "Yeah, I've got nothing better to do. We can go for a swim. That's fine." He then claims that when they were in the car together, she had a bit of a meltdown and she needed support from him, some sort of emotional support. So he convinced her to go back to his property. I mean, bear with me because it's just ridiculous. He then claims that despite it being the first time that they'd ever had intercourse together, he and she was upset. So this was his way of comforting her. They had intercourse, and then he introduced the idea to her of breath play and erotic asphyxiation.
Yeah.
And he said, "Yeah, that sounds great. Let's go for it," kind of thing. Yeah. And then he was strangling her and she fell onto his chest and died.
Accidentally died.
Yeah, accidentally died.
What pathetic defense. And typical and totally expected.
Oh, totally.
Completely unoriginal.
I know. I mean, there's the problem is there's so much evidence to the contrary as well. So the blood spatter that was found on that shirt was Jane's. So his shirt, Jane's blood on it. And the prosecution were able to show that this was likely him standing behind her, strangling her, and blood would have come out of her mouth as she would have been dying, essentially. And that's why it was found where it was found on it. The other thing was that the jeans that she had on, or the trousers that she had on, the way that they were found, it looked as if they'd been taken off her forcibly. One of the legs was inside out. Okay. And the ligature was still around her neck. If it happened accidentally, would you leave the ligature in their neck? You would try and take it off. You would try and resuscitate them, but it was left there. And above all else, the fact that he just then decided to keep her body and hide it and then set it on fire. I mean, there's no care for her at all. Even if he'd cared for her, you know, you hear these stories that just from the psychological point of view, where people who've killed someone that they care about, you know, they cover them up, they dress them, they close their eyes, they show some sort of care, towards the body. And there was just absolutely none of that. Additionally, so 3 years prior to the murder, Graham Coutts had sought psychiatric help for an obsession with violent porn and strangulation.
Why is this a common? Why is this a common feature of these types of cases?
I know, it's quite horrific. Concerning. If you look at the search terms that he was searching, it just sickens me that people would want to find pictures of women hanging and things like that, porn related to that. The fact that even exists just boggles your mind.
And it seems to be more common than you'd like to think as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So they got exes of Coutts on the stand as well, and they said that he had strangled them previously, and he'd coerced them into breath play, and that he was generally quite unpleasant and violent, could be violent in the bedroom, and it was something that they hadn't, you know, they weren't up for it. It wasn't consensual. It wasn't BDSM. It wasn't any kind of kink. It was him forcing that on them.
Yeah.
One of Graham's previous partners told the court that on one occasion he had said to her, quote, "I get the most awful feelings that I'm going to strangle, kill and rape a woman," end quote.
Oh my God.
She also told them that when she was looking for something in Graham's house, she found pornographic images. I'm guessing they were 2D images where he had then hand-drawn nooses around the girls' necks.
Jesus.
And what we were talking about before, there is evidence that Graham had had sexual intercourse with Jane Tremaine's following her death.
God. Jesus.
So it appears that he murdered her in his property, but then he stored her remains in his shed until he could rent the storage unit. And that's when he transported her.
I'm surprised he was able to do so under a false name. I thought they would need proof of identity and things.
I don't know how these things work, but yeah, I was quite surprised by that as well. The other thing that made me a little bit sick was the fact that his partner was pregnant with twins at the time.
Oh,
and
God.
He claims that part of the reason that he didn't tell her about the accidental killing was because he didn't want her to miscarry. So this poor woman, her best friend's been murdered, her partner's done it, she's pregnant with twins.
Her whole life's fallen apart.
Yeah, totally. And she's actually chosen, in part, to maintain a relationship with him so that her twin boys can know their father.
That's a huge decision.
Yeah. So they've seen him in prison. She also joined forces with Jane's mum. So Jane's family have done some campaigning and lobbying of government to increase laws on basically the legality of that kind of pornography and how to police it. But it's incredibly difficult to police that kind of thing. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. The good news is that he was found guilty of murder and he was sentenced to life in prison.
Good.
Judge Brown said, quote, "Everything that this court has heard about Jane Longhurst shows her to have been the sort of person whose life enriched all those who came into contact with her. Her undoubted love of her partner, her music and her life screamed out of every page of the evidence I've heard in this case. By persisting in your denials, you've put those loved ones through the ordeal of this courtroom and have forced them to relive the last moments of her life and the unbelievable degradation of her body. You've shown not one jot of remorse," end quote. And I think that really is it. So she was a classical musician, but just seems like she was a really good person as well.
Yeah.
And thankfully, her parents had a very strong faith. So her mum ended up in talking about it in an interview about the fact that her body may have been interfered with after her death. And she essentially said that, you know, "I believe in the soul and Jane's soul is no longer in her body, so yeah. I don't believe that he had..."
It was just a vessel. Yeah,
exactly. I don't believe that he's been able to affect that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's a better person than I am. That's all mm-hmm. I could say. He's still in jail. He had an appeal. So the appeal was granted. The reason for that was that the way that the judge presented the options for sentencing and for the verdict was that he essentially told the jury that they could either find him guilty of murder or acquit. But because he had said that it was accidental, he should have also offered manslaughter as an option.
Mm-hmm.
So they retried him. He was found guilty of murder once again. And that's the end of that, essentially.
Wonderful.
But yeah, he's got a life sentence with... it was originally... I did notice that the... Oh no, that'll be why that is. I was about to say I noticed that the time served changed. But the reason for that was I think he was already in jail for that amount of time. Because originally it was a life sentence with a minimum of 30 years for parole and then it was changed to 26 years for parole. Mm-hmm. But he'd already been in jail in that
time. For 4 years.
Yes, that'll be why that is. He actually maintains a blog and
what?
I wouldn't bother yourself looking at it. It's not worth it. He likes to moan about prison conditions and how they don't have good enough vegan food for him and things like that. He still claims he's innocent. He launched a 2-year campaign to get moved to Scottish prison to be closer to his family because his mum's getting old. And he wanted to see, quote, the snow-topped mountains. How about you don't murder someone and you could spend time with your mother and go and see snow-topped mountains?
And
there's always
the
option of, there's always the option of not being a rapist and murderer. How about that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wouldn't bother looking at the blog unless you want to get really angry. But, yeah, the thing that I find quite interesting when I was looking at it is the lobbying that Jane's family and friends have done to look at this kind of extreme pornography. Mm. Because all that's really happened is it's made it illegal to own it, but it's usually not the people that are, you know, that are caught in possession of it that are the people that are making it.
Correct.
And there's been a lot of psychological studies from around the world that shows that restricting access to pornography doesn't actually have much of an impact on the levels of violent and sexual crime. And I think I've said this before, but I just have this belief that there have been rapists and murderers since time immemorial. Mm-hmm. And it very sadly does seem to be a part of human nature. And mm-hmm. it seems like there are these dark desires that exist in certain parts of society. I do think that we should make it harder to get access to these things. And I certainly wouldn't want it to be easy for people to find in any way, shape, or form. So I do agree with the lobbying, but I just think it's an interesting one to think about, that to what extent do we start restricting these things and driving it more underground? Is it going to, you know, which way does it go? Do you know?
Yeah, to be honest, it's a difficult one because I've been back and forth about pornography and I've wondered about what my views are on it and things like that. I think the problem for me is that I agree. I think that there's been, you know, murders and rapists, you know, since time began. But I think the thing for me is that I think some people seem to, well, for start, become desensitized, mm-hmm. you know, when they're consuming a lot of this sort of content, but also are removed from reality. Most people know that pornography is very unrealistic. A relationship between two people in the bedroom is very, very rarely what you see in pornography. It's just completely fake, basically. Mm. And I think that's it. I think that there's some people that are just sort of swayed by that, maybe, you know, and like removed from reality and, like I say, become desensitized and things like that. And then
addictions now, aren't there? Like, there's people that can get treated for addictions to it, which mm-hmm. is scary.
And I think as well, there's probably a population of people that then want to act out those fantasies that they've had as a result of, you know, consuming this sort of pornography. It's a difficult one because it's, to me, it's kind of similar to people that are like extreme gamers. You know, they get people that they say, oh, you know, it's glorifying like guns and shooting and murdering and all that kind of stuff. And I get that. But then I guess it depends on the person and their psyche, like how they perceive reality, their own norms are. You know, if you're talking about somebody who has already got psychological issues, then they're probably going to be more prone to the stuff. Whereas if you take somebody who's probably very fairly well-rounded, they're probably not going to be as, you know, influenced by these kinds of things, I guess.
I think the thing I would liken it to is that there are people out there who are obsessed with serial killers to the point of wanting to emulate them or mm-hmm. copycat them or even be in romantic relationships with them or, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Whereas I would say that there are a lot of true crime lovers and buffs out there who do not. We have a very different reaction to it, but we mm-hmm. still consume much of the same media.
And yes.
I don't know that that means that we should necessarily restrict all of that media. Absolutely any kind of, like, so with extreme pornography and violent pornography, anything that is non-consensual, underage, anything to do with animals, that, you know, anything like that, I absolutely mm-hmm.
should be
agree.
Banned.
But then there's such a fine line of, you know, what if there's scenarios where someone is pretending to, you know,
be an animal not, or something.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah, like
where do you draw the line?
What about people that wear fursuits and stuff like that? Are we saying that that's zoophilia? I mean, so it's really, really complicated. I think there's stuff that's clearly illegal and that's different.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that some of the lobbying groups are very conservative in nature and we just crack down on everything.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's as well, I mean, I imagine that even if some decision was made, it'd be incredibly hard to enforce or police because,
yeah.
I mean, even you've probably seen the articles recently, there's been a lot of outcry about Pornhub, you know, and the fact that essentially it's not the people that own the website that, you know, add the content or produce the content. It's uploaded by just regular users, but there's no verification of that content. So a lot of what is on there is actually like victims that have been trafficked. You know, I was listening to a podcast recently and it was quite interesting. Somebody was saying, you know, they wanted to understand the difference between prostitution and trafficking. And I've heard a lot of comments actually recently. There was one woman who was actually a prostitute and I've heard this mentioned several times recently that they prefer to be referred to as prostitutes. Okay. That actually they find that the term sex worker is a little bit almost demeaning because it's for them, some of them it's not a choice. Like do you know what I mean? And I think sex worker maybe intimates that they are choosing this profession when a lot of them actually aren't. Like, it is pretty much the only thing that they can do.
I definitely think that there's definitely more of a spectrum now because obviously there's like the rise of sites like OnlyFans and people on there would openly identify as a sex worker. But for a lot of people, that's like a side hustle. That's something that they're doing as well as a job that they're doing. But yeah, absolutely. That is really interesting because you wonder if people using the term sex workers, making it mainstream, it's softening it. It's
taken out the harshness of it.
Around the edges.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. So yeah, it is interesting. And that's the thing. It's what somebody was explaining it to be was the fact that, well, trafficking is when somebody has basically, you know, it's typically someone who's vulnerable, maybe being, you know, a young runaway or whatever. They've been sort of lured in by people that have promised to take care of them, be their friends, whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, they've provided them with drink, cigarettes, whatever the thing, you know, the sort of advice that they might have would be. And then they're like, well, now you owe us. So now you have to prostitute yourself in order to pay us back kind of thing. Yeah. So at that point, you would probably say, well, you'd probably be inclined to think that that person's prostitute. But actually, if it's a situation where they are not doing out of choice, they're kind of being coerced into it, then they're essentially trafficked. A prostitute would be somebody who chooses to go out and sell sex in exchange for money or, you know, other things. Would be someone who's actively going out, like, on their own volition, of their own choice, maybe because they don't have any other means, maybe because they do have a family to support and they can't get a job, you know, or whatever reason, but they are going out, you know, they're not being coerced, they're not being pimped out, you know, anything like that. They're doing it because they need income, they need to support themselves or the family, whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is interesting because when it comes down to it, a lot of what we would maybe refer to as prostitutes or sex workers are probably actually trafficking victims.
That's so sad, isn't it? But I think it's also one of those things where the language is always evolving and things take on different meanings. So I guess that's something just to highlight to listeners if we ever use any terms that, you know, may not fit your understanding or your appreciation of a subject. We are doing the best that we can and feel free to educate us at any point. Like I said, language is always evolving and we try to be as open and understanding as possible, but sometimes things move along and you don't know about it. Or it,
absolutely,
actually, I'm one of these people that I just tend to ask people how they identify, how they want to be referred to.
Most people have a preference, and I think that's it. It's, you know, if, you know, it's well-meaning and there's respect behind it, you know, it's never meant in a disrespectful way or, you know, a sort of flippant way at all or anything like that. But Yeah, it's interesting. I've heard more and more, like, mention of that more and more recently in the media that I'm consuming, that, you know, on one of them, she was actually a prostitute. She's like, look, I'm a prostitute. I don't like it. I don't like being referred to as a sex worker. That's not what I am. That's not what I do. You know, and stuff like that. And yeah, I am hearing that more and more, which is quite interesting. But,
I guess it's like the stripping versus exotic dancing thing as well, because, I do pole fitness, but that obviously started from the stripping scene. That's literally where it came from. And now it's been gentrified, I guess, into something that women like me go and do after their work just to get fit and feel good about themselves. But that is where it came from. You know, it started in clubs, and that's the truth of it, and that's the background of it. But, you know, there's still people, dancers out there who don't like being called exotic dancers. They call themselves strippers because they feel that they are a stripper, or the other way around. And yeah, I think it's important that people are able to use whatever labels they feel best fits.
Absolutely.
Themselves. And why would it bother anyone not to use those?
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. It's, you know, it's part of your personality, it's who you are, and therefore you can choose your labels as in how you wish, basically. That's your preference.
Did you know of that case then?
It's funny because when you start talking about it, I thought either I have heard something about this case before, or very, very sadly, there's another case where someone's remains were kept in a storage facility. Right, okay. And as I was thinking about it when you were telling it, I thought, well, unfortunately, it probably is very likely that there has been another case where the person's remains were kept in a storage facility. So it might not have been the same case. But yeah, I have certainly, if it's not this case, then there was another case that I have been aware of where that happened. And it's, God, it's just it's so sad. It's, I mean, especially for Jane's family, but then also even her best friend, you know.
Imagine her partner. He was under suspicion as well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's it. Those people, their lives will never be the same. You know, I was watching something recently, and they were basically saying that it might only be one person that dies, but the, like, resounding impact that has on everybody's lives, that ripples throughout the whole family. And, you know, even within, in fact, actually, I think it was Paul Holes that was talking about it on the Small Town Dicks podcast. I think that's where I heard it. He was basically saying one person will be murdered, but that will then, you know, that will continue in that family. That whole family will be tainted, and not just that, you know, it'll be the next generation, as it continues and people are aware of it, and it'll just carry on and it'll spread.
It's the community. It's things like, you know, an area of town or a bar or a road or a house, or, you know what I mean? It's all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, it has such a wide reach and impact on people. It's so, so sad. But yeah, one thing I was curious about, actually, I don't know if you know the answer to this or not. I was wondering whether his partner, Jane's best friend, testified against him in court.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Don't have that information.
Oh no, actually, she must have done, because she did make comments about his sexual preferences as well, with regards to him strangling partners.
Yeah, I was wondering what she'd said about that. So she agree that?
She said that they did breath play, but it was, I believe at that point it could be considered consensual, but only because he'd kind of badgered her for so long into doing it.
Right. Let's see.
It's a treat. It's not a nice guy.
No. So presumably then, if he was sentenced in what, 2003?
2004.
All right, so he's still got a while to serve in prison then.
Yeah. Oh, that was another thing that was sad, is her mum, she said, oh, I'm really glad I got 30 years, because then I'll probably have been passed away by the time he gets out.
What a shame.
Like, oh, God. What a waste. Like, well, imagine even having to take that into consideration, thinking about things. That's just awful.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she has her faith, and that seems to have brought her a lot of peace.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really interesting case.
Do you have a fun true crime fact?
Yeah, let me see if I can cheer us up with an interesting true crime fact. Okay, so the ones I've got are quite short. So I might read you a couple.
Okay.
So, a deputy responded to a report of a vehicle stopping at mailboxes. It was the mailman.
That'll do it.
A woman in the 1900 block of 129th Lane Northeast reported October 15 that someone must have stolen her mail because she did not receive birthday cards from some of her friends.
Oh, that's really sad.
That is sad, isn't it?
Oh, no. Also, what did she want them to do about it?
I know, exactly. I'll give you a couple more. At 8:29 p.m, police received a call from a Dubois woman who said she smelled something funny in her room last night. She believed that it might be her husband.
We've all been there.
Yeah. Especially after curry.
Oh, Jesus. This is why we have spare rooms, people. So see, if you're that person calling the police because nobody sent you any birthday cards, like, at what point do you have to think that might be a you problem?
Like, I know.
When's the self-reflection coming in? Like, this has happened 3 years in a row now.
Yeah. Here's another one. So, Wednesday, February the 14th, 9:36 a.m. Suspicious person circumstance. A woman from Northfield turned over to the police department some marijuana that was found in a parking lot. If you lost a bag of marijuana, please come to the Northfield Police Department and claim the bag. In Sonora, a man came to the sheriff's department to find out how to legally kill a person who was harassing him.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did they help him? Did they help him out?
Did I tell you this one? I can't remember if I did or not. The learning centre on Hanson Street reports a man across the way stands at his window for hours watching the centre, making parents nervous. Police ID the subject as a cardboard cutout of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I don't know, but I really like that one.
That's a good one, isn't it?
When we were in student accommodation, there was always people with like weird cardboard cutouts, and they'd give you a right fright, like if you looked across at the wrong time, and then you're like, oh no, it's Will Smith, that's fine. It's okay, it's just Will Smith again.
This one's maybe not, maybe this is like a bit borderline, but I'll read it anyway. You can decide whether you find it offensive or not.
It's never good when you need a disclaimer.
A 34-year-old Mount Pleasant man was arrested Wednesday and lodged at the Isabella County Jail for domestic assault for pulling the arm of a woman and hitting her in the head with a submarine sandwich.
Oh.
I think that maybe meant sub. A Subway sandwich, I'm sure they mean.
Is that what they're named after?
What, submarine?
A submarine sandwich? Oh my God, a submarine sandwich is a thing.
Oh. Yeah.
Subways are named after submarine sandwiches.
Oh my God.
A submarine sandwich, also known as a sub, a hoagie, a torpedo, a hero, or a grinder, is a type of cold sandwich made from a cylindrical bread roll split lengthwise and filled with meats, cheeses, vegetables, and condiments.
Interesting. I did not know that.
And it's because they look like submarines. There's really nothing more complicated about it than that. They look like submarines.
Do you know what's kind of funny? You know how like American and English, like we have like totally different names for some things, like just completely different. I love how that's, you know, described like submarine sandwich, sub, hoagie, whatever. And we would call that a finger roll.
Oh, no, it's not as big. It's more like a baguette.
A baguette's hard.
I bet it's bigger than a finger roll, is it not? Because finger rolls are like that big.
No, they're not. A finger roll is the roll that you would cut down the side and put a hot dog in. That's a finger roll.
But a submarine roll is like 12 inches long. A submarine roll is like 12 inches long.
Yeah, if you're a greedy bastard, I would get a 6-inch, which is the equivalent of a finger roll.
A finger roll, you're lucky if it's 5 inches, Joanna. You're being generous with your inches here.
I've been doing that again, am I? Yeah. I'm known for that.
Chestnut.
You've been listening to Murder, She Spoke. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Probably that's it. If you want to email us, you can contact us, even though nobody ever emails us. info@murdershespoke.net. If you have any case suggestions, get in touch, let us know. If you have enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, please go and leave us a 5-star rating or review on your favourite podcast platform of choice. We're also trying to get to CrimeCon this year in September. We are currently saving up for tickets. Very expensive event. It's going to be a lot of professional speakers, demonstrations, booths, etc. Very expensive tickets. Emma and I are saving up our meagre income from advertising to get us to CrimeCon in September. It's not getting us very far. Some very, very generous soul recently bought us a cup of coffee on our coffee account, kofi.com. So thank you very much for that. If anyone else would like to go over there and buy us a cup of coffee or send us some pennies which we can put to our CrimeCon piggy bank, then it would be very much appreciated. Just look us up and you'll find all the information on there. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week for our 50th episode. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.